Hey, I'm Rachel Peterson, marketing expert and queen of social media. The question entrepreneurs are always asking is, how do I make social media work? How do I make money with social media for my clients and for myself? We're going to break it down on this episode of Social Media Secrets. Hey guys, today I am incredibly honored to be sharing with you a very special interview that I did with one of my absolute favorite authors. I read one of his books and it changed the way that I went into negotiations, how I saw business and finance. It was really a moment that changed everything for me in business and in sales and negotiations. I'm talking about none other than Chris Voss. He is the CEO and founder of the Black Swan Group, the author of Never Split the Difference. This is the book I'm talking about. Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It. Chris was actually the lead international kidnapping negotiator for the Federal Bureau of Investigation, as well as the FBI's hostage negotiation representative for the National Security Council's Hostage Working Group. During Chris's 24-year tenure in the Bureau, he was trained in the art of negotiation not only by the FBI, but also by Scotland Yard and Harvard Law School. He is also a recipient of the Attorney General's Award for Excellence in Law Enforcement and the FBI Agents Association Award for Distinguished and Exemplary Service. And he is so tough to get a hold of that his executive assistant did not believe that he agreed to an interview with me until we provided actual proof of our conversation. I am so excited. I know you're going to absolutely love this interview. Chris is incredible. And just so you know, we have linked to a few resources that are mentioned throughout this episode. You are going to really enjoy them. You can find them at rachelpeterson.com/podcast, and you'll find it there in the show notes. Or if you are watching on YouTube, just click the link below.
So tell me about your beginning, and you're like, okay.
I was born in Iowa. Actually, I was born in Illinois, but I grew up in Iowa.
Oh, so you're a Midwest boy.
I'm a Midwest boy.
Where do you live now?
West Hollywood.
Oh, that sounds so wonderful.
It's not bad at all.
I'm in Minnesota, so I understand the Midwest life a little bit.
You're the Northerners. You guys are from the northern region. Compared to Iowa, you guys are up in the north.
We're like almost in Canada.
Huh?
We're almost in Canada.
Almost in Canada. Where in Minnesota?
We're just outside of Minneapolis.
Did you grow up there?
Uh-huh. Born and raised in Minnesota. We travel a lot, but now that we have three kids, it's just such a great place to raise a family. I love it here.
I'll bet you do. That's cool. That's cool. And I bet your kids love the outdoors.
No.
No?
Not really. No, not yet. They're not really outdoorsy kids.
We gotta kick them out.
Just send them outside. Go play at a park. Enjoy.
Exactly. Yeah. Get out of the house. Come back before the sun goes down.
Yes, exactly. Well, that actually leads into my very first question for you, which is kind of interesting because I read your book, Never Split the Difference, at the recommendation of my mentor. He said, Rachel, just read this book.
Wow.
Don't talk to me about pricing until you do. And it has transformed the way that I see business conversations, negotiations, my pricing. It has radically transformed my business, Chris.
Wow, fantastic. You're pretty darn successful to begin with. So if it's helped, I'm really happy to hear that.
It's been amazing. The level of confidence that I've been bringing to a lot of technically intimidating conversations with huge companies has been it's been wonderful. So I want to thank you for that.
Wow. Wow, yeah. That's a very high compliment. Thank you. My pleasure. I'm happy that it's helping.
I've been telling all of my students and my followers, you've got to read this book because I work mostly with social media managers, freelancers, people who kind of just take what they can get. And that kind of leads me to one question, because if you would have talked to me a few years ago, I probably would not have described myself as someone who was a great negotiator, and I'm starting to see that skill set develop. So is that something that you learned throughout your life, or were those kind of skills already in your DNA? Were there glimmers of that when you were young?
No, I think I learned it throughout my life. I mean, I'm a little bit of a subscriber to Daniel Coyle and the Talent Code, which is probably very little is actually in our DNA. You know, people that look like naturals or prodigies or, you know, whiz kids, whatever. So their interest got caught earlier than anybody noticed. And for whatever reason, they had a success they enjoyed, and then, or something happened that caused them to enjoy it. And then you know, follow your bliss, for lack of a better term.
I love that.
I mean, I think I don't think there's much that's actually in our DNA at all, actually.
I love that. One thing that you mentioned throughout the book were different stories of people who were not naturally negotiators. They hadn't had any training either. And they'd come to you and present a situation and you would solve it, give them kind of a script, and you'd say, don't deviate from the script.
Right.
And I noticed that most of the deals that were lost were because people deviated from the script. One of the things that I find really interesting is you really give people a recipe for success in negotiating. Is it really that simple?
You know, it kind of is. And what people have a problem with is either it's counterintuitive, or we throw an idea at them that runs contrary to their wiring, if you will. For example, the phrase that we teach people, have you given up on this project? Have you given on X? Whatever it is. Send it out as a one-line text or one-line email to somebody who stopped responding to you. Mm-hmm. Literally 900 times out of 1,000, they're going to respond very quickly. I mean, the batting average on that is really high. That's a little context driven. They have to have given up on responding to you to begin with. But then I run into, and this happened to be a woman in this case, man or woman in the stories, doesn't really make any difference. Yep. She came up to me and she says, I sent out your one-line text and it didn't work. And I thought, all right, cool. It's possible. Word for word, tell me exactly what you sent. And she said, well, it sounded a little accusatory. So instead of saying, have you given up on this project, I sent, should we give up on having lunch together to discuss how we might do the project? And I thought, no wonder they didn't respond. I wouldn't have responded to that either. But she had a couple of bad habits. One of her bad habits, which we see a lot of people do, is they say we when they mean you. And that's actually a really bad habit. You know, the boss comes up to you at the office and says, look, we got a problem. We don't have a problem. He's saying you got a problem. So it's a bad choice of pronouns because you're disguising it. Mm. And have you given up on this project? It is meant to be provocative. I mean, provocative isn't necessarily negative. It's context driven. So yeah, when we give people scripting, sometimes I say, do this word for word and don't deviate. And your batting average is going to be much higher.
I love that. That's something I teach so many of my students. Just follow the recipe. It may not be easy, but it's simple. Just follow the steps. Yep. I love that.
Try to make it simple. That's a great point.
Absolutely. So one question I have for you is talking a little bit about negotiating. Some people assume that negotiating is, and you shared a little bit about this in your book, the negotiating is like what we see on TV.
Right.
And you know exactly what I'm talking about. People are slamming their hands down on the desk, they're pointing fingers and they're yelling. And the moment that I think of negotiating, or at least before I read Never Split the Difference, literally I would think I'm going to have to play hardball and I would gear up and brace up and get really kind of crazy. That's not all that there is to negotiating.
No, and that's what there is to bad negotiating. I mean, really bad negotiating. I mean, none of the people that are really great negotiators do any of that kind of nonsense. I mean, they're patient. They don't back people into a corner. They don't make threats. Hmm. Now, that's not to say that you can't be successful with those bad habits, you know, because we got some poster children out there that seem to be successful with those bad habits. First of all, they're a minority.
Yep.
Secondly, they're not as successful as they could have been. Hmm. You know, all right, so, you know, at the risk of gaining the ire of our current president of the United States, You know, the Hudson Yards, which is this phenomenal real estate development in Manhattan right now, Trump had that. But because it was so hard to get along with, he couldn't develop it. Nobody could. No one would touch it while he was involved. He wanted to have the tallest building back in the 1980s. Wanted to have the tallest building, the most grand. You know, maybe his vision was awesome. Maybe it was. But by that point in time, nobody would cooperate with him. And that's the reason why it took so long to develop it, because he wouldn't let it go. And finally, when he finally sold his interest, somebody else came in, much more low-key. And it's now, I was just in some of the office space the other day for the first time, and I was just blown away at how nice it was. So, you know, the hard bargainers in business, yeah, you know, they leave so much money on the table. They don't know how much value they destroyed or how many deals that they've lost because of that. So, yeah, it's not about slamming your hands on the table or being the loudest, angriest person in the room.
I love that you brought up Donald Trump, and all politics aside.
Yes.
He has definitely a kind of a wild card approach to negotiating that can be very interesting. And then I think about like Warren Buffett, for example, who's basically he has a negotiating tactic of not negotiating categorically. And he recently came out and said that, which I found really interesting. Do you think that there's still money left on the table for anyone who says, I don't negotiate?
Well, that in and of itself is a negotiation approach. And it, what people are really saying is, look, I'm open to better ideas. Mm-hmm. But if you think you're going to change the price, you're wrong. Wow. Now, I promise you, if you sat down with Warren Buffett and you said, hey, look, Warren, here's how we can make this work better. Here's how everybody's going to get more money out of this. And you begin to adjust the non-price terms. Mm-hmm. Warren Buffett's a smart enough guy. First of all, he's going to listen to you. You know, he wants to hear people out. So if I don't negotiate, primarily is we're not budging on the price. And I got to tell you, we don't budge on our price in my company. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk with you a lot about implementation, and we'll talk with you about the other terms of the deal. And we'll always look to make the deal better. But do we negotiate on a price? Not unless you throw something a lot more valuable than dollars on the table.
I love that. That reminds me of, I believe you told the story about a publication, right? Where you were able to see that there was valuable real estate within the publication, and that was really valuable within that deal, right?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite deals of all time. And it's a talk on negotiation that I technically gave for no fee because the whole package was so phenomenal. And then the people I got to work with were so smart, and they gave us the seeds of some other ideas. It was one of the best deals we ever cut.
Wow. You mentioned that was one of your best deals you ever made. What are some others that stand out to you as the ones you're really proud of or had some kind of personal gain that you found just fascinating?
Well, you know, that's one of the ones that's a favorite. Anytime we engage in a collaboration where we're teasing out ideas from the other side, I recently did Tom Ferry's a real estate guru coach. Runs a phenomenal conference. And we priced that when we first started talking to him. That was pricing that was about a year old. And I remember going down there thinking, like, how much are we getting for this? But then he is so collaborative. I mean, first of all, the conference was phenomenal. One of the best warm-up welcomes I ever got to any talk I ever gave. He tries really hard to help his people. His social media visibility was phenomenal. I was just blown away at how great the conference was. And as actually now I talk about, there's two conferences like that I've done recently where we ended up doing it for old pricing, if you will. But the benefits once we got there were through the roof. So those happened to us a fair amount.
Now, not everyone listening to this is going to be familiar with the concept of a win-win. Can you share a little in your own words what that looks like? Because most people hear win-win and they think Michael Scott from The Office talking about a win-win-win, like all parties win. So what does that mean to you?
Well, it's, first of all, forgive me, we don't even use the terms win-win because that thinking is, first of all, it's almost cliche thinking. But in point of fact, everybody has to be better off in a deal that we cut. which in reality is win-win, right? The other side's got to end up ahead. But even more importantly, if whether or not they ended up ahead, they got to feel like that they were respected and heard out and treated honorably in the process. You give somebody a great package and be abusive in the way you give it to them and have them resent the deal or have them turn around and walk away from the deal. So how people are treated is phenomenally important through the course of the negotiation.
Yep.
And win-win is an idea that's been out there long enough that actually there's some cutthroat negotiators who will say, hey, I want to do a win-win deal with you when they're trying to get you to drop their guard. And if somebody says they want a win-win deal with me and they say it in the first 2 minutes of the conversation, I know what they're really trying to do is get me for nothing, and they're not trying to give me anything in return. So we're a little cautious of the words, but point of fact, yeah, you know, everybody's got to be better off or they're not going to want to keep doing business with you.
I think that's one of the things most people don't understand about business is that it's not always all these people trying to take advantage of each other. It's everyone wants to benefit so that everyone can grow in a negotiation. And I mean, when I say everyone, that sounds like everyone has that as their best interest. Not always the case, but most people I find just want what's best for them in their business. And if you get what's best for your business too, even better, right?
Yeah. And actually, and I completely agree when you say most people. Mm-hmm. In my estimate is no less than 2/3, probably at least 3/4 of the people that everybody deals with want to make a great deal with you. They don't want to take advantage of you. So basically, if you trust, the numbers put you better off. It's a minority of the people that are going to try and cut your throat. So, and even the throat cutters, it just hurts so much emotionally that it stands out as a much worse loss than it ever was. So yeah, by and large, people are on your side. Give them a chance. Presume that they're on your side, but you know, test it along the way. Make sure if your gut instinct, after you've interacted with them for a while, tells you that these people are bad news, your gut instinct is probably right. But give people a chance and you'll be better off.
I love that. Oftentimes when we hear someone come in with a negotiation or a lower price or a much higher price than we expect, it's almost like a visceral reaction.
Yeah.
And take it so personally. How did you first realize that emotions were sometimes a barrier to negotiating?
All right. So yeah, let's draw some distinctions.
Beautiful. Let's do it.
All right. So it's not emotions. It's negative emotions.
Okay.
Negative emotions constrict our thinking. And sometimes they also make us feel self-righteous simultaneously, which then we're thinking on the wrong path, but we're even more convinced that we're right. You know, there's an old saying, give a speech when you're angry and it will be the greatest speech you ever regret. So negative emotions don't help us. Now, positive emotions actually enhance our thinking. Sean Acker has a great TED talk called The Happiness Advantage. And he's a Harvard psychologist who's run a fair amount of data and a very funny guy. He says you're 31% smarter in a positive frame of mind. So in the psychological state of flow, which is our most productive state, where we see the most, we can process the most information, our pattern recognition increases, our mental endurance increases. That's actually a highly positive state of mind. So it's not emotions that are bad, it's negative emotions.
Okay.
And then once you begin to understand that and you have an understanding of how to navigate them and an understanding that they are always present, then that puts you sort of a leg up on a process, which is one of the reasons why we use the term tactical empathy instead of just empathy, because we know how the brain works now. We might as well tactically take advantage of that if we know how it works.
That's a really important distinction. So thank you for making that. The difference between positive and negative emotions in the frame of context, not just for negotiating, but for business as well.
Yeah.
Now, you see a lot of heavy situations, some that people might consider too much for the average person to handle. How do you stay in a positive state of mind given the serious conversations you have throughout the day?
You know, one of the hacks, there's a couple of hacks. One of them is curiosity. I mean, just being legitimately curious. Like, if you're legitimately curious, you're interested. I mean, you're taking in the information. You're in a positive frame of mind. You're not necessarily looking to say yes or no. You're just looking to explore, to investigate, to find out. And, you know, then take in the data and then make up your mind. To be intentionally curious is a real hack to keep you in a positive frame of mind. That's one of the easiest ones. Okay. You know, the other one is, you know, do intentionally engage in gratitude exercises. That's actually a way to keep yourself dialed in. Our brain is mostly negative, but the positive aspects of our brain, if unleashed, are ridiculously powerful. So with, you know, developing a few habits to keep that positive part of the brain unleashed, and, you know, it's pretty cool what you can pull off.
That's amazing. What books do you like to read besides, I don't know, do you read your own book? I've never written a book, so I don't know. Do people read their own books?
You know, I review it occasionally when I'm looking for a refresher of ideas.
Okay.
You know, I'll go back and, you know, the book is a, actually it's a collaboration between myself, my son, and Tal Roz. And Tal's credited on the book. My son Brandon isn't, although I cite him in the acknowledgments that the book wouldn't have happened without him. So I check the book occasionally for a reminder to trigger, you know, to refresh myself of ideas. But I read a lot. I mean, reading a former Royal Dutch Shell executive said a long time ago, learning faster than your competition may be the only sustainable competitive advantage. And so we are looking to read constantly, and I read a lot.
Oh, I love reading. I usually finish several books a week. And then my mentor asked me to slow down and focus on one at a time and take notes and apply everything. What are your favorite books?
All right, I got to ask you a question. I get asked a question now.
Yeah.
All right, you mentioned your mentor a couple of times. Now, I'm dying to know who this is. It's got to be a very smart person.
He's very smart. His name is Bart Miller, and most people don't know who he is yet.
Yet. Okay, cool.
Yes. He's kind of a brilliant part cowboy, part stylist, part business strategist, part mentor. And so he understands everything about like personal brand, all the way to how to shape your narrative, how to explode on social media. He understands a lot. He's almost in a way like a manager at this point, which is kind of interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, and see, that's how I find out about, you know, who to read about, whose stuff to read, because you know, I'm blown away at the stuff that you're doing.
Oh.
Very cool.
Oh, thank you.
Whoever's influencing you is somebody I want to know about.
That is such a compliment. I was going to ask you, and this is kind of a side tangent, how in the world did I get your attention? Because getting people's attention is one of my favorite things that I do. And how did it work for you? I was a little nervous considering you're a master negotiator.
Well, I think, didn't we first cross paths on Instagram, I think?
Yes. Yep.
You know, I pay attention as much as I can to who follows me. Mm-hmm. And then if they like a post, I'm curious as to what about what we do attracts people. I mean, sort of like minds, thinking like thoughts. I mean, I'm very much into collaborative negotiation, collaborating to helping people change their lives. So then when I saw your Instagram feed, first of all, just because you have a big following doesn't mean that your heart's in the right place. I mean, there's no shortage of exploitive swimsuit models out there with, you know, tons of followers and don't have a thing to say.
Yep.
But I'm really kind of blown away at the positive, can-do, collaborative nature of the stuff that's on your feed. I really like it.
Thank you.
It's forward-thinking versus past-focused. And so, yeah, I mean, when I saw your stuff and highly positive, highly collaborative,
thank you.
Then just, you know, want to have the opportunity to collaborate however we can.
And now dreams come true. I'm so excited about this.
That's very cool.
Yes, absolutely. So back to, unless you don't want to answer it, what are your favorite books to read? Do you have old standbys? Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So there's the first three that I recommend on a regular basis. I like anything that Stephen Kotler has written, but the first book that he wrote is The Rise of Superman. Mm-hmm. And Kotler's stuff is good. I mean, you grab anything that he's written, but that's where I'd start. Daniel Coyle's got two phenomenal books out there, The Talent Code, about getting better as an individual, and also The Culture Code, about getting better as a company. And then a friend of mine, Eric Barker, has a phenomenal blog called Barking Up the Wrong Tree and a book by the same name.
Awesome.
And Eric is a practical guy that wants to know what works. And his book is, you know, it's a science of success, and it's readable, and he distills a lot of information down really well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for those recommendations.
Of course.
I've got my top five, and it was crazy because I was so set on them for so long. And then along comes your book, and I was like, oh, I actually don't even have my copy because I gave it to my dad right away. I said, you need to read this book. This is incredible. But it quickly shot to the top of the list, and it's so good. If you're watching this, if you're listening to this, just do yourself a favor, head on over to Amazon, go order yourself a copy. You will be thankful that you did as soon as you finish the book.
Thank you. I'm curious about the other books.
Ooh, okay. Happy Pocket Full of Money.
Ooh, all right.
David Cameron Gicaldi, hard to say last name. I love Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. He is one of my mentors, the founder of ClickFunnels. And he is the first person who helped me to see the potential. Up until that point, we were doing okay, barely scrapping by. And I went to his conference on a whim, could barely afford the ticket, could barely afford the plane. And when I got there, suddenly I saw, this is what is possible. We can knock through the glass ceiling. So that was really powerful for me.
Wow, Expert Secrets, and that's principally a marketing book? Or is it an organizational book?
Yes, it's a marketing book, and it's kind of the foundations behind marketing, how to build an attractive character into your business, how to build a mass movement, build a culture. It's really well done.
Wow, cool. I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, for sure. Never Split the Difference is on that list. I should have said that first, but I feel like I already did say that first.
Thank you.
I love Psycho Cybernetics. I found that absolutely fascinating. Have you ever read it?
No.
It's so crazy. It talks about how your mind is ultimately the number one how machine. It figures out the how while you sleep, and all you have to do is know what and why. It's very powerful. So it's the science behind everything, like The Secret and all of those, you know, law of attraction talks about the science of why that is, why the brain perceives, let's say, for example, you know, you drop something on your foot and then later on you imagine yourself dropping something on your foot, your brain still lights up in the same spots,
right,
as if it were having something dropped on it, on its foot, that same day. Isn't that so crazy? And so if you can truly believe that things that are massive and beyond your imagination are happening, your brain figures out how to connect the dots.
I dig that a lot. That's very cool.
It was so fascinating for me to read. Oh my goodness. And then my fifth favorite book is The Art of War, Not the War of Art by Sun Tzu.
Very good. Classic, timeless wisdom.
Oh, it's so amazing. And every time I read it, I pick out a new nugget, and I see how it applies to business and life and slowing down. It's really neat.
Ah, all right. Beautiful. Thank you very much. You just added to my library.
Oh, well, if you love reading as much as I do, you're going to enjoy those so much. They're amazing.
Yeah, I do.
So cool. Okay. Here's one crazy question for you. So if anyone grew up with kind of a conditioning like I did, you kind of believe you get what you get and you don't make a fret and you just deal with it. Sometimes it's difficult to break through the idea that you can ask for more.
Right.
It's almost like we believe that by negotiating, we're squeezing every last drop out of someone. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you mentioned it in Never Split the Difference, but I think it's just a fascinating way of kind of breaking the patterns so many people have from childhood.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and it's sort of the only way to break out of it, you know, whatever you're thinking is that's limiting you, is start trying to tease better interactions out of your small stakes conversations, your tiny little interactions, you know, maybe given people the benefit of the doubt a few more times in something that it doesn't matter if you don't get anything out of it. I like pens. I happen to like sort of Italian style pens. And so I bought one online and I'm not sure that it was manufactured exactly right. And so I had in my head that they're going to give me a hard time. They're going to blame me that, this is the way the pen is. They're all like this, any kind of nonsense. And I thought, just let me call and give these people a chance. Just let me see what happens. Like if they refuse to take it back, if they refuse to give me a refund, I'm no worse off than I am now. Mm. Just give them a chance. And the young lady I spoke to on the other end of the phone was delightful and actually went above and beyond for me. So, on the stuff that you've already written off, mm-hmm. Say, okay, let me try to have a pleasant interaction with somebody. And you'll kind of be delighted at how often that ends up being well on the plus side for you. And if you kind of get used to giving people the benefit of the doubt, then that'll go against and maybe debunk, those two lines of that were drilled into your head. Don't ask for more. Be happy with what you've got. Don't raise a fuss. You kind of test that a little bit and say, hey, as long as I'm not a jerk, I get a lot more out of everything if I just give the situation a chance. But you got to try it out when you haven't got a lot of skin in the game. Because that way you're less scared. You're more likely to try it. If your objective is to only have a pleasant interaction with someone, you'll begin to find that it's easy to ask for more and get more simultaneously.
I found that to be true. Right after I read Psycho Cybernetics, I started believing that the world wanted better for me because it was just that this crazy shift I had. And one day we were in Las Vegas and I just walked up to every single person as if the whole world loved me and I loved the whole world. And we went to dinner that night and we had asked her which restaurant we should go to. And she said, oh, that one right there, it's the best. And when dinner was done, they bring this big dessert by our table and they say, the young lady who pointed you in this direction called up to the restaurant and said that she had a wonderful interaction and she wanted to send you guys dessert tonight. And I was blown away. It was almost like people were just waiting for someone to be kind.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they are. And I think there's something palatable to the energy that we put out. There's something actually there and you can trigger it in somebody else, which is probably part of what they write about in Psycho-Cybernetics, the fact that that happens. So nice job.
Thank you. That was a proud moment. That was my favorite dessert I've ever had. And I've had a lot of desserts. So,
yeah.
Well, one question I have for you is when you look at people in not just the marketplace, but in life who are modeling an incredible job of negotiating, who comes to mind? Who do you admire in negotations?
Well, nobody thinks of her as a negotiator, but Oprah's phenomenal.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
And since for whatever reason within my company, since we've been talking about how much we admire everything she does, I hear more. I've heard a number of stories. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to tell you something. Oprah takes a hard line with people.
Wow.
But she does it in this wonderfully delightful way. Like, if you're doing business with Oprah, in point of fact, you're doing it Oprah's way. And I've had some conversations that she's had. Somebody in a position to have been part of the conversation has relayed to me that in sum and substance, what Oprah said to some very high profile people was, look, it's my way or the highway. But she says it with such regard for people that, most people, it's my way or the highway. And if you don't take it my way, I'm going to hate you or we'll be enemies. When Oprah says, look, if you're going to do my show, you're going to do it my way. And if you don't do my show, never forget that I will always be on your side. I will always love you and I will always support you and I will understand why it was that you couldn't do the show.
Mm.
Conversations like that. So she's phenomenal. She's absolutely phenomenal and one of my favorite examples. And you're not going to find somebody that's a better example of success because she came from beyond disadvantaged. Yep. And look at where she is now.
One of the things that you just said, it struck me almost as like a parent's love, the way that she goes into negotiations. It's almost with like a parent's love. And for anyone who's listening to this or watching this and you're not familiar with that, parents will even show up when their kids have done terrible things and visit them in prison. parents' love for kids can at times be incredibly unconditional, sometimes almost illogically unconditional. What do you think about that?
No, that's a really interesting point. I hadn't heard it put like that before, and I think that's a great way to think of it and put it, because yeah, your parents don't always approve of what you've done, but you know they're always on your side, and they don't always agree, they don't always go along with it, they don't always give you your way. But a good parent, yeah, exactly, is, and quite often disagrees actually, but is always on your side. So that nice. I like that insight. I'm going to use that.
Perfect. My name is spelled Rachel Peterson, P-E-D-E-R-S-E-N. I'm kind of kidding, but not really.
Well, I got to tell you something. I always give credit as long as I remember, because, you know, first of all, you know, there aren't that many people out there that thought of something original to begin with. So look, I give credit. I absolutely believe in giving credit. So yeah, Rachel Peterson.
Yes. And I'll help you with the spelling if you need help. Most people botch it slightly, so I always have to remind them. But speaking of parents, you are a parent. Do you have more than the one son?
Just have the one.
The one son. As a parent, what has been your proudest moment? I know your son's name is Brandon, right?
Yes.
Yes. And Brandon has been a part of your business, an integral part of your business. Tell me a little bit about what makes you the most proud as a dad.
You know, he's just starting to blossom in his 30s. But he's always been, you know, his heart's always been in the right place. You know, we all make mistakes to the head, but is our heart in the right place? I mean, all of his friends are good people. Mm-hmm. And they have sometimes come from tough circumstances. Like in his 20s, my son was a bouncer in a variety of bars. You know, they didn't call themselves bouncers, but they, you know, doormen. And so he hung around with a lot of really big, really physically capable people, but none of them were jerks. Mm. You know, his friends were good people.
Yeah.
So his friends have always been good people. He's always been independent. When he was in his late teens, he ran his own business and he employed his buddies.
Wow.
And they did, they washed boats. I lived on a boat in a marina at the time. And he and his buddies, you know, they become sort of famous in the marina of just doing a great job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, kid's heart in the right place. He believes in the right things. He's always a good person. So I'm proud of him in a lot of ways. And he's a smart guy, and he's finally not arguing with me as much as he used to.
It's amazing that even when your dad is one of the top FBI negotiators in the world, the top, right?
Well, you know, you can make that argument, yes.
The top FBI negotiator in the world, he still argues.
Well, you know, what's a kid going to do? He's been exposed to negotiation since he was 2 years old. He's got to try it out.
Don't you love when you see kids use the things that we say to kind of get their way? I see my kids doing sales and marketing at times. Well, you know, Mom, if you got me a computer, I'd be able to do some graphic design work for you. I like what you did there. Well, I'll think about it.
You want to teach them how to think, right?
Exactly.
How to think.
Yes, that is so incredible. Okay, so I have one question for you that's a little bit silly. I'm just curious if it's easy to spot what types of negotiators or what negotiating archetypes people have.
Well, some of them, like the assertive Donald Trump sounding negotiator, there's three types. There's fight, fly, and make friends, for lack of a better term. You know, nobody sounds like an assertive other than an assertive. So they're a little easier. I mean, I'm a natural born assertive. In my view, I think that's why I have a little bit of insight into the strengths and weaknesses of the assertive type to start with, because I was figuring myself out. The very analytical type, the flight type, you know, the type that sees conflict is highly impractical and highly destructive. You know, they often come across as very cold and distant because they're trying really hard to be dispassionate. Only the analyst sounds like the analyst. Now, the accommodator, the relationship-oriented, the make-friends type. The other two types will occasionally masquerade as them because they see the accommodator making deals that they were unable to make. And if they are either of those two types are open to learning, they'll catch on as to the edge you get by being likable. My daughter-in-law, my son's wife, Maya, is in our company also, and she is an analyst. And she comes off completely as an accommodator.
Wow.
Because she is one of the most delightful people to be around. And she laughs and smiles and doesn't argue. And she's extremely analytical. But because of this demeanor that she has, she's actually also cut some of the most phenomenal deals on behalf of our company. Because she's highly analytical. She's very, very smart. And she's really pleasant to interact with.
That's incredible. So sometimes people wear masks because they believe that that's what society possibly wants.
A little bit, or, you know, the learners begin to see that it's more effective to be pleasant, as silly as that sounds.
No.
But it is more effective to be pleasant. So, you know, I'm a little blunt. I'm a little in your face. I've learned that unvarnished is counterproductive. So I teach myself to smile occasionally.
Oh, that is so funny. I think I know a lot of aggressives in my life. A lot of them.
We're out there, aren't we?
Yes, you are. There was one funny side effect. Side effect isn't the right word. Effect of reading Never Split the Difference that I thought was really powerful. And I even used it today. In reading the book and reading about the archetypes, I discovered that my husband is an analyst. And I believe that I am an accommodator. And so, but possibly, well, we'll see.
So possibly what? Are you possibly one of the other two types?
Possibly an aggressor secretly.
I wouldn't be shocked.
So I had him read the entire archetype, and he definitely was an analyst. And Chris, this was so surprising to me because whenever he would go quiet, and when I was explaining, you know, honey, I need to get this marketing thing, I would just keep talking and talking, or start raising my voice and being like, we need to make this happen, when I didn't realize he just needed some quiet.
Yeah, that's how it's easily misinterpreted.
So yeah, it was powerful for my marriage too, in that I started to interpret his silence as not disdain, but just needing to back up for a second and take in all of the data, which that was really powerful for us. Even today, as I presented a new crazy idea that I have, he works as our CFO. And so he's able to say, like, don't spend on this. Yes, we can handle this. Hold off a month on this. Go double down on this. But that was really powerful in our personal lives. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it really is kind of interesting. And I could definitely see how that would happen, because the analytical types, sometimes all they're looking for is space, and it's really easy to misinterpret that or interpret it as disdain when it's not. They're just thinking.
Absolutely. That was really, really powerful for us. What other ways have you seen the concepts of negotiating, or rather different kinds of negotiating, apply to people's personal lives outside of business?
Wow. Well, it all does. If you define negotiation as the desire for great collaboration and you know, the desire to demonstrate understanding and to be understood and to reap the benefits of understanding one another. So yeah, it applies. I mean, it applies across the board. Some of my favorite stories are people who have healed personal relationships by just applying the skills. You know, one guy who he worked for both Amazon and Google, and he was one of their negotiators that was cutting $100 million deals. I mean, literally $100 million deals. Very soft-spoken guy, analytical guy, and very much into just the effects of demonstrating understanding via a tool we call labels. Wow. So he gets into a very serious argument with his sister at a family gathering, where his sister's under incredible stress because she's the primary caregiver for their dying father. And at the family gathering, she'd had too much to drink, and he'd seen this happen before. Because of the stress and alcohol, and you start lashing out. So he said one day, she starts in on him, and he realizes it's just his turn. And all I wanted to do was make her feel heard and to not dispute a thing that she said. And so using these tools, she attacked him for a full hour before she finally just ran out of gas. And the next day she sent him an email that said, "Yesterday I attacked you and you showed me nothing but love.
Wow.
Thank you for being my big brother." So that's, it works in people's personal lives.
That is so powerful. I only really have one last question for you, and it's kind of funny. What is it that you wish people would ask you about more?
I don't know. We talk about a lot.
We really did. This was an incredible 45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit along, there isn't anything I wish people would ask about me more, because the conversations tend to be delightful. I mean, I'd be happy to talk about, a couple of people that I've been delighted to meet recently and that I'm collaborating with, that I'm just enthusiastic about because I think they're wonderful human beings.
Please do.
Top on that list is a guy named Sean Stevenson. Okay. Sean is a motivational keynote speaker. He was born with a number of physical handicaps, and he is determined to make the world a better place. And he's a brilliant dude with a wicked sense of humor. So I love the fact that I've gotten to meet Sean Stevenson recently, introduced by another mutual friend, Joe Polish. Those are both cool people that are making the world a better place.
Chris, where can people learn more about you? Because I know they're going to be searching everywhere, and I'm going to say go buy the book. So where can they get more content from you?
Well, I tell you what, if you buy the book and subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, you're going to get a long way. The newsletter comes out every Tuesday morning, short, sweet, concise article, just one. It's not overwhelming. Tuesday mornings. The best way to subscribe is via text to sign up. You text to the number 22828, and it's 22828. Send FBI empathy, all one word. Your spell check's going to want to put a space in there. Don't let it do that. And you'll get a dialogue response back asking for your email address. And the book and the newsletter will take you a long, long way. So the newsletter is also the gateway to everything else we do, and we got a lot of free content. We got some stuff that you could sign up for, but go for the book and the free stuff first, and then you want to kick it up to the next level. We could talk about that.
I love that. And we will link to all of that in the show notes in the bio beneath this, so that way it's easy for you to grab all of those amazing resources. Chris, thank you so much for joining me.
You are awesome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for watching and or listening. We'll catch you guys in the next episode. Bye.